My name is Sarah Mayberry. I serve as the director of the Smoke-Free Housing Coalition of Maine. I'm going to be presenting today with my colleague Tina Pettengill, who's our coalition founder and chair, on creating smoke-free public housing on our work in Maine, just as we have no relationships to disclose today. Just really quick, we've got 20 minutes. I'm going to be going very fast. It's a good thing I drink a lot of coffee and I can talk fast. We'll be good. But we're going to be going over sort of that background for smoke-free public housing and sort of factors for adopting policies and identifying the strategies for voluntary policy change through just looking through a little bit of background pieces here. Just to give you just who we are, because we're a small organization, we're funded by our state's tobacco control program to do smoke-free housing efforts across the state we do smoke-free housing, tobacco-free hospitals, and tobacco-free colleges across the state of Maine. That's our role back on the East Coast. And it's through doing this through technical assistance, resources, and tools just to make sure that people are able to adopt these voluntary smoke-free housing policies. So that's our effort. So just to get into our presentation and why I know that a lot of this is our very short slide because this is all background information to all of you who are here, but why we're doing this. Of course, we know that there's no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke, but when it comes to housing, we've also heard that there is no way to stop the movement of smoke between units. So we've even heard from ASHRAE, who's the leading authority on ventilation systems and pieces, that the only way to effectively eliminate secondhand smoke exposure in housing is to make a smoke-free policy. So, and that across the country, we're looking at the leading cause of residential fire death. So the nice thing when we're looking at these pieces is that there's so many different factors to talk about when we make our case for smoke-free housing. And looking at this, just as we continue along with our background, that what we see is that not only does this provide a great health opportunity, but this is a win-win when we're talking about the housing organizations because of the fact that they can save a lot of money at turnover costs when it comes to smoke-free policies. They are, as we mentioned, reducing their fire damage, their potential property issues, insurance savings, and reducing some liability, in addition to providing a healthier opportunity for their tenants to live there, and meeting the need of the majority of people who would prefer to live in a smoke-free environment. We know nationally that that's between like a 74% to 80%. All studies have shown that that's where we're sitting with an interest in smoke-free housing, so to make sure that people are meeting this need. So it's a good, I like it. It's fun. Wins. So as I mentioned, when taking off our public health hats and finding the sales pitch for smoke-free housing, we know that luckily it's between 5 to 10 more times expensive to turn over a unit where smoking has been allowed. So when landlords are looking at this, it's a great opportunity. Also, when it comes to that, we're providing, it's also reducing the amount of time that unit has to go vacant, that they can be collecting rent because of the fact that people are, they're having to do cleanup and all these pieces. And across the country, we're seeing a lot of insurance companies give between a 5 to 10% sort of discount on smoke-free policies. So an opportunity if you're as part of your fire casualty plans because it's such a leading cause of residential fire death and are pretty extensive fires. Just to show that monetary impact, we worked with across New England, this is a bunch of public housing authorities and subsidized housing facilities that sort of went back and looked at those that were smoke-free or pre and post smoke-free policies at their what the savings were when they were adopting these policies. We are often told how low these numbers are. I guess it's cheaper in Maine. That this is now, it's an even more increase. So just to show you that this is something really to be pitching when you're doing smoke-free housing work. The growing support for smoke-free housing is now there, as everyone has hopefully seen, especially coming from the CDC through Healthy Homes. But the key when working with public housing and why I think that the movement is really starting to get there is because there's a growing support from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. They put out two memos recently on smoke-free housing, first in 2009 for public housing authorities and 2010 for all subsidized housing, Section 8, pieces like that, encouraging for those same reasons that we know about secondhand smoke, fire safety, and costs to go smoke-free. So I think as we look at that, it's really been a huge impact on the national scale of why we're seeing so many public housing authorities that have adopted these policies. Also, this past spring, HUD put out two rather large toolkits, both for residents and for housing authorities on adopting smoke-free policies. So there's really a lot of push there, and finally some support that's happening. So with that, what we're trying to do is we've seen that really the public housing authorities were where we're focusing our talk today, but the fact that now this slide is getting more and more fun as I've been working on this for years, that pretty much every type of housing is going smoke-free. And if we look at it nationally, we're seeing that this really is an evolving norm. We're lucky to see that it's no longer the exception, it's becoming the norm. We're no longer dealing with an issue that people are, on the large scale, questioning the legality of smoke-free policies or whether or not it's discriminatory to adopt, but are seeing the values and tenants are pushing for it. So across the country, we're seeing hundreds of thousands of market rate and subsidized units going smoke-free at every single size and level, and from things also condo associations are another big push, that things that are happening now. But from the public housing authority side, it's really been a huge change that's happened over the past 12 years. Nationally, the numbers that are kept, we've seen in 2000, there were only three PHAs that had adopted smoke-free policies. And as it, you know, it took years to get up to 30, it took a solid 5 years. Now we're at over 300. So that's really an exponential growth and things that are happening, and it's becoming a national trend, which is really exciting. The reason we wanted to share this with everyone, that what we've had in Maine is we've seen the same sort of evolution. Now we have 100% of our public housing authorities that have gone smoke-free, as well as having two of our five tribal housing authorities that have adopted a certain level of policy. So it's something that is happening over time, but is becoming much more common. And with that, I'm going to actually share it with my colleague, who's going to go into the sort of how piece, now that we've given a little bit of background on that. So Tina, come on up and explain that.
Thank you, Tina Pettengill. Yeah, we have to talk fast because normally we spend, you know, an hour or two talking about these things. But you can come up and talk to us afterwards if you have questions. So why did we focus on public housing authorities, and why do we encourage other folks to focus on public housing? Of course, we know who lives in public housing. It's more vulnerable people in general. It's people of low income who need quality, safe housing and don't have a lot of other options. So we have, when we first started doing this work about 10, 11 years ago almost, we specifically chose a strategy that included public housing authority because, again, these are vulnerable people who don't have a lot of other housing options, if any other housing options. But there's still people who want to live in smoke-free housing. So it's a great place to, if maybe not to start your efforts, or maybe if so, if you haven't started, we think it's a great place to start. If you haven't, we encourage everyone to start talking to their public housing authorities because, again, these are vulnerable populations that really have no other options. So we want to help provide them with those options to not be involuntarily exposed to secondhand smoke. And of course, we know a lot of you probably have heard this statistic, but we as a nation spend about 90% of our time indoors, and about 50% of that time is spent in our homes. That's even higher for some of the elderly populations, of course. In Maine, where it's cold for 8 months out of the year, our numbers are higher than this. Somewhere around 65% of our time is spent in our homes. So if you're exposed to secondhand smoke in that multi-unit building, a lot of your time is spent in that unhealthy environment. A couple other reasons to focus on smoke-free housing in multi-units is, again, I mean, we look at some of the statistics around who is exposed to secondhand smoke, and our folks who are below the poverty line are being exposed at a higher rate than people who are above the poverty line. And we know from our data in Maine that low-income housing tenants prefer smoke-free housing at actually a higher level than market-rate housing, so people who don't live in low-income housing. again, that's recent Maine data. We also have statistics that concern us on the flip side that show that landlords who house low-income folks actually don't understand this. They think that their low-income tenants prefer to have smoking allowed, when it actually is the reverse, that more low-income tenants prefer to live in smoke-free housing than their counterparts in market rate. So again, another good reason to focus on low-income housing. So some of the things that we did to get all of our housing authorities smoke-free, again, this is a 10-year process, so it didn't happen overnight. We had one of the first housing authorities in the nation go smoke-free in 2003 and have been working steadily with folks since then. But that if you can get one housing authority in your state to go smoke-free, it's a domino effect, I promise you. Get that one housing authority, big or small, to go smoke-free. They will see that it's not as bad as they thought it was going to be. Pre-policy anxiety is always worse than the actual anxiety that does occur. And once you get them to go smoke-free, they will be your champion for your other housing authorities. They talk to each other. They trust each other more than they'll ever trust any of us. So get one of them out there to stick their neck out and be first, and then the other ones will follow. Another great thing is, of course, connecting with your state housing authority. We have worked from the very beginning working with Maine State Housing Authority. We're lucky enough in a small state that at that point I could just call up the director and say, can we come in? We will take only half an hour of your time. We made an appointment. We started that education. And then the ball started rolling. Once she understood that smoke-free housing was legal, it was justified, that she was going to save every landlord in her portfolio money, it was not too hard to get them on board and have them start with little pieces. Then they started doing the education for us. We would supply them with information. They would provide it to their portfolio landlords. They would let us speak at their conferences, things like that. So get them working with you and for you, and let them take some of the credit, too, for being leaders in your state around it. They love that. So bring them in. We also have worked with our state housing authority around our QAP, which is your low-income tax credit program. It's a little bit complicated if you don't know about it, but it's a way to build in incentives for people who are being funded with low-income dollars. You build in incentives to be smoke-free, and those, again, create this norm around smoke-free housing that we're expecting you to be smoke-free. If you choose not to be smoke-free, you're going to be on the fringe. But let's create the expectation that everyone's going to be smoke-free with our low-income tenants. Again, the housing authority, we educated them, they helped make the decisions, and it trickles down. And then, of course, building allies in the subsidized housing industry. Again, find the ones that are already smoke-free. I'm sure there's ones in every state at this point. Find them, become friends with them, go to their parties, you know, wine and dine them, whatever you have to do. Go to their conferences, join their associations, write newsletter articles for their associations. Do whatever you have to do to infiltrate that system and make it part of their system. Don't make it public health coming in. Make it part of their system so they integrate it into their policies and the way they do their work. We've also used direct mail and earned media. We have basically have never had much of a budget, so we have never been able to do a lot of media, but that can be sometimes helpful. I think the one thing that's not on here that I would add is another thing to do. We did a lot of survey work at the beginning in 2003, 4, 5, where we surveyed tenants of housing authorities specifically to find out how they felt about smoke-free housing and their housing authority maybe passing a policy. So many of these surveys have been done around the nation now. I don't think it's necessarily the first thing you should think of, because once you start looking at these surveys, you'll see that the results are pretty much all the same. Sarah mentioned earlier, somewhere between 75 and 85% of tenants, no matter whether it's low income or market rate want to live in smoke-free housing. So look around, look for those studies. We'll share our website. We have our information on there. You can take our results, take results from around the country. But if you need that type of data, you know, take one housing authority that's being friendly to you or is considering passing a policy and go ahead and survey their tenants. It doesn't have to be expansive. We do 5-question postcard surveys and the data will be good. I can almost guarantee you if you get a high return rate, your data will support your efforts. And then you can again use that when you go to other housing authorities to support those efforts and that domino effect. So here's the basic steps. I mean, again, this is kind of like an hour or two training, but these are the basic steps. If you're interested in helping a housing authority pass a policy, it's pretty basic. I mean, we boiled it down to 5 steps, kind of as you would with any basic project plan. Obviously, you need to make a plan. You need to sit down with that housing authority. There's no cookie cutter approach to smoke-free housing. You have to sit down with them, look at their population, look at their buildings, look at their grounds, look at their property managers and their maintenance staff. You know, how is this all going to work together? And then you come up with a plan. The only thing that we strongly recommend against is grandfathering tenants. We used to do this 10 years ago. It was great policy 10 years ago. It's not good policy anymore. We've learned a lot since then. Don't grandfather tenants. If you want to talk to me more about that later, you can, but it's not worth it. I promise you that. Hold meetings, obviously with the property owners and the managers to get them on board, but also with the tenants. I've never gotten my car scratched yet. Never been keyed, you know, or anything like that. It was close a couple times, but we've held a lot of tenant meetings, and at the end you get some really irritated people, but at the end, if it's presented the right way, usually you can come to an understanding with your smokers and your non-smokers. You're not talking about evicting people. You're not talking about asking people to quit smoking. So once people understand that, you know, the level of irritability and discontent goes down pretty quickly, and you start to see some buy-in pretty quickly. And then, of course, informing the tenants through as many communication channels as possible and as often as possible. We don't think that you need to give months and months of notice. But depending on your population, somewhere between 3 and 6 months is a reasonable amount of time. You're asking some people to really change the way they go about their daily life. So you need to give them some time to figure out how they're going to change that way of life. Again, you're not asking them to quit smoking, but you are going to be asking them to go outside. And that can be a real hardship for some folks who are mentally ill or who are incapacitated or immobile in some way. So you need to give them a little time, but we encourage against the 9 months, the 1 year, because our experience has shown that the anxiety level actually just goes up, and you need to just let's get the policy. We're going to talk to people ahead of time. We're going to get people in some level of agreement, and then we're going to go ahead and implement that policy, and we're going to hold to that policy. We're not going to let people have 4 warnings and 10 warnings and, you know, things like that. We're going to hold to that policy just like we would any other policy, like not having pets or you know, the noise levels. It's a policy like any other policy. And we've found that when people pretty much follow these steps and they're clear about that policy and they promote the status and they're champions of it, they don't try to say, oh, and now we're going to have a smoke-free policy. They say, we are so excited about our new smoke-free policy. This is what our tenants want. We're going to do this for the health of our buildings. Our tenants... we're going to have a party to celebrate. I don't know. Some people do crazy stuff. They give out T-shirts. We recommend, you know, maybe a little more low-key, but we have a lot of success in just providing, asking them to provide resources and support for those tenants who do wish to quit. But generally, make them be proud of that policy. This is something they should be proud of, especially in public housing authorities, where this fits with their mission. They're following their mission of providing safe and healthy homes. So it's something we like to remind them of that. And just lastly, if you want to get a hold of Sarah, here's some contact information. And our website, thesmokefreeforme.org, is very comprehensive, including all kinds of downloadable information for tenants and landlords in several different languages, including a video and some other things that folks can watch. Ha, 5 seconds.
Perfect. Fabulous tag team.